Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have...
It's exhausting.
Here's John Williams.
But I do it. This is John. 18 stories above the Chicago River. Downtown in the Windy City, it's a beautiful day. We hope you're having a nice one. September can be the funniest month. We're having a good one. August and July weren't too bad either, were they? We're here till 3 on weekdays. Saturday mornings, 10 to noon. Don't forget the mincing... Rascals is the award-winning podcast judged by the Illinois Broadcasters Association to be the best in the state this year. We think it's pretty good. And the gang has a few topics to tackle. Now, on Saturdays, we replay some highlights from the Mincing Rascals on my Saturday show. So it usually drops around 5 p.m. on Thursday. And then Saturday, we just feature a little bit of it. Since we're not on this Saturday, because we're being preempted with Northwestern Go-Cats Wildcat football featuring Dave Ennett and Ted Albrecht, we're going to at least introduce one of the topics here on the radio today. It'll almost be a preview, if you will, of something I know we're going to talk about on the Mincing Rascals. And we'll get to that with Eric Zorn in just a second. One other note, and that is tomorrow we have plans to visit with the people that are behind the Whitney Houston hologram tour. What's your gut reaction to that? Whitney Houston hologram tour. You like the sound of that or you don't?
I don't really like any hologram tours. I think it's kind of disrespectful. I do think it's awesome to try and give people an opportunity to see someone that they love that they maybe didn't, but I don't know.
I went to the website of the company that does these things. They have a Buddy Holly and a Roy Orbison show. And it's just pretty amazing. I don't remember what they did with Michael Jackson, but I'm sure it was awesome, too.
Didn't they also have, like, a Prince one?
I was thinking about that. Did they? I don't know. But I know they want to do Whitney Houston. And when here was my first reaction. I saw that and went, oh, no. And she's so lovely when she's younger and so radiant and so promising and talented. And when you see her as a hologram doing a concert, I just feel loss. I feel sad.
Right. You got to enjoy them when they were around. And again, not that you can't enjoy them now, but it's just not the same.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because it's okay to listen to the music. It's okay to watch Bodyguard, the Bodyguard movie that she did with Kevin Costner.
Of course.
It's okay
classic.
To watch an old music video, but somehow this crosses the line, and I can't put my finger on it. But I think it does. So I Googled around to see if I could find the video because it's going to open in Europe, actually, the tour. The Whitney Houston tour is opening in Europe. And I don't know if it's got some Chicago dates, but we're planning on bringing the people that put this on our show tomorrow. Keep your fingers crossed on that one. If not, we'll do a hologram of them. Oh, and speaking of visiting with people who aren't here, Teddy Roosevelt, boy, I mean no disrespect with this, is going to join us on stage at the Elgin Community College Blizzard Theater. We visited with the man behind the curtain. We don't normally do that. I don't like to, but I don't like putting the almost hysterical voice at times of Teddy Roosevelt on for a great length on the phone, on the radio. On stage, it works. On stage, it is utterly entertaining. It's, boy, you think that I think big thoughts, so you don't have to. This guy is the original. And he's an amazing creature, Teddy Roosevelt. He comes to life in the first person. I interview him on stage, and then you get to ask questions, too. You will enjoy this show. Tickets at WGNradio.com/Teddy. You might not enjoy this. Look at the headline in the Eric Zorn column, The Off-Putting Theology of the Bears Kicker Eddie Pinheiro. We all know what happened last year. The Bears didn't advance in the playoffs because we had a double doink missed field goal. So now every field goal that we kick is a real heart tugger. And as it turns out, Eddie Pinheiro has been the only guy scoring for us. And he's the reason we won our game this weekend in Denver when he made that last second, 0 seconds, 53-yard field goal. Before he goes up to kick, do you notice he points to the sky and does a prayerful thing? And then afterwards, he says things and tweets things like, all credit to my Lord and Savior, the glory of God. I'll give you the exact quote. Where is it here? And I just lost it. If you don't believe in God, you'd better start believing he's real. Eric Zorn called that kind of language a taunt. He said it was nonsense. And the headline in his column calls that off-putting. Our news click at WGNradio.com asked you what you thought of Zorn's nonsense remark. And 49% of you said Zorn is right. The other 51% of you are somewhere between I don't know and Zorn is wrong. Eric Zorn's on the phone. Hi, my mincing rascal friend. How are you?
Hey, John. Nice to talk to you.
How's your week been?
It's been really interesting. I've had dozens and dozens of letters from people who are really grateful that I wrote that commentary, and scores of letters from people who are angry about it. So it's been really interesting. Very, very heavy response on all sides of this.
Summarize your point, Eric.
Well, my point had less to do with his tweet and more to do with what happened right after Peter. He kicked a 53-yard field goal, for those of you who don't follow the Bears as closely as a lot of us do. Kicks a 53-yard field goal with 1 second left to win the game, and Fox Sports gets him on the field, and he says, they say, you know, tell us your feelings. And he says, for everybody listening, man, if you don't believe in Jesus Christ, you better start because he's real. I promise you that. And to me, this sounds like he is saying, I just kicked this field goal. I mean, asking for in the context, he's saying, you know, hey, I kicked this field goal. Jesus is real. Therefore, you know, this demonstrates to you the power of Jesus, the power of God that this field goal went through, which is troubling if you realize that he is going to miss field goals this year. And you sort of imagine in some ways that God is moving a ball in between the uprights or not, depending on whether someone is a faithful Christian or not. That, to those of us who don't see things the way he does, it's kind of an aggressive and it's kind of like, you know, suck it, atheists that went through the uprights. And, you know, I am used to the kinds of things that you're talking about, you know, all credit to my Lord and Savior, the glory belongs to God, and the pointing to the sky. Those things to me are expressions of humility, in a way. They're people saying, you know, I am blessed. I have these talents, and I've had the opportunity to get into this position in order to be an athlete at this level, and I am humble and grateful for the success that I've enjoyed. That's not what I heard in Eddie Pinheiro's crowing after his field goal, and then the tweet that you read about, you know, God, the actual tweet afterwards was, if you don't believe in God, you better start believing he's real. And that to me crosses a line into saying that God has something to do with the ball going through or not. And like I said, I thought it was well beyond the sort of garden variety, you know, all credit to my Lord and so on that we hear.
Well, to be clear, he never said, suck it, atheists, God's on my side. And maybe that's because I'm with you on this, Eric, and I'm always trying to figure people out. And I suppose, rather than being aggressive or passive-aggressive, another way to read that is that he's giving all glory to God, that his ability is a gift from God, and that's one way to say that. And it's no more judgmental, it's no more superior than that.
It sounds judgmental to me, and it sounds like it's a different kind of thing. Now, some of the people who wrote to me to complain about this or to take issue with me said, but, you know, you got to give the guy some slack. He's 24 years old. He's really enthusiastic. He's just done an amazing thing. He is, after all that the Bears have been through, he's kicked this field goal, and so he's just sort of speaking off the top of his head. He doesn't think it through. And that's, you know, I mean, that's probably true. It's quite an emotional moment, and he probably hadn't scripted it out before he kicked the field goal. What am I going to say when the TV newscasters come to me? But it does have this sound to me like, hey, this proves that my faith,
yeah,
has something to do with the success here. And again, you know, Cody Parkey was a very religious guy. For those of you who are wondering about
some
that.
Some of the Cubs are, too.
Yeah, and Cody Parkey, it was very interesting when he had his quadruple doink game. Remember he had a game last year before the famous double doink. He had a game in which he hit the uprights four times. And afterwards, he said something to the effect of, "Well, you know, this is all part of God's plan for me, you know, and that, you know, I don't really understand why this happened, but I know this is part of God's plan." Which, you know, I have no problem with that kind of expression. I you know, whatever people believe, how they get through it, as long as they're not sort of implicitly saying, "Hey, this proves something that you ought to believe. You ought to believe that God exists because I just kicked a field goal." You know, that's how I heard it.
And in the instance where you miss it, I do not know the response to if God granted you a made field goal in the win, maybe because you're a believer and you have great faith, then how do you interpret a missed field goal? Or does it mean that God favors you over the Denver Broncos? And I don't know how to... I don't know what the answer to that is, Eric.
Well, that's why the idea of, like, you know, hey, I am a professional athlete. I have come, however I got here to this place, the parents I had, the training I had, the coaches I had, the luck I had to get here, and the opportunity with this, you know, 15, with the 4th and 15, the Bears converted and he had a chance. I mean, it was like this whole series of things that happened to put him in that position. However that happens, whether that's luck, whether that's God, whatever it is, a humility to say, hey, essentially, I don't know how this happened, but I'm giving credit to God for it. And when Cody Parkey sort of gave credit to God when he missed four field goals, I thought that was, you know, that's a very consistent
role. Oh, sure, I guess so. But if I'm another, I don't even know that makes sense. I mean, tit for tat, right? So maybe life is complicated and God controls our destinies. If that's the interpretation of that, then I'm wondering how the other members of the Chicago Bears feel about it, right? Because maybe they're thinking, hey, wait a minute, don't do this to me, man. I don't know what your transgressions were or what God's plan is for you, but I was hoping to win the game.
Yeah. Imagine if he had missed that field goal and they had interviewed somebody on the Broncos and they'd said, well, you know, we saw him pointing to the sky, where's your God now? That would have been offensive and stupid, and of course God had nothing to do with whether he made that field goal or not, and that's why the reverse of that is also a little offensive to me. It's like, you know, hey, I get being humble in the face of this. I get proclaiming your faith, but the connection between the made field goal and God is real, Jesus is real, you better believe it, folks, struck me as going too far.
Well, if you're not an agnostic or an atheist, I wonder if you do believe in God and you do believe in something divine, I wonder if you think that he ever favors a field goal kicker or a baseball player. Is it ever God's plan? Is God ever up there going, hey, you owe me one now because, you know, that fastball, that was me, baby. I wonder if people feel that. And I also wonder this about you, Eric. Do you ever pray for God to help you with something? Answer that for me in a minute. 312-981-7200. I'd like you to chime in as well. What are you thinking here? 312-981-7200. Call or text or just beam it to me. This is WGN. Eric Zorn wrote the kind of column that, well, frankly, people like him get paid to write. They're provocateurs. But he really feels this way. He thinks the idea that God helped Eddie Pinheiro kick that field goal is nonsense. And now he's hearing from our listeners and texters about it. All our lines are busy, Eric. How about that?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, I would not say that Eddie Pinheiro's faith did not help him kick that field goal.
Agreed.
I would not say that at all.
I didn't mean to imply that if I did.
Right. No. And I mean, you did not say that, but you said, you know, that God didn't help him. Yeah, I don't think God helped him, but I think his faith in God helped him.
That's an interesting distinction.
Maybe it's a fine point.
Right. So if your faith gives you comfort or if your faith gives you strength, then I'm so happy for you that you found that. But then when they asked about the field goal, you literally credit your faith or the reality of Jesus in people's lives for the kicking of that field goal. I think that actually trivializes Jesus, but that's just me. I want to take some calls with you, Eric. Do you mind?
No. Yes, fine. Yes.
You sure?
Yes. No, I don't mind at all.
Bonnie, you're on WGN. Let's all go quick. We're close to out of time, but Bonnie, what did you want to say?
You know, haven't you ever said, oh, thank God, or thank you, God, for something? And it doesn't, it's not that meaningful. It's just an expression of gratefulness.
Yeah, what about that, Eric?
Well, that's not what he said, though. I mean, he didn't say, "Oh, thank God, I made that field goal." That's a colloquial expression in that instance. And what you're talking about, yes, everyone says that, I'm sure, all the time. But if you're, you know, that's not what he said. But I understand her point.
He said, "For anybody listening, man, if you don't believe in Jesus Christ, you better start because he's real. I promise you that." George, thanks for the call, Bonnie. You're on WGN. George, you're on the air.
Hey, so my feeling is if God has enough spare time on his hand to watch a football game and bless a field goal, why doesn't he spend some time working on childhood cancer?
Eric, your thought on that?
Oh, exactly. There's, you know, how many millions of people are going to bed each night without clean drinking water? I'm not going to blame God for that, but I don't think God is going to concern himself with who wins a football game. That would be just my theology.
Thank you for the call, George. Steve, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Yeah, I'm an Ann Arbor guy like Eric, and I understand where he's coming from. But you know what, Eric? You're not a theologian. You're not a sports writer. We don't really care what you think about religion. Leave the man alone. He's a good Christian man. He said what was on his mind, and we're not really that concerned about what you think about it. Goodbye.
Thank you for the call.
I just want to say go blue.
And the texts include these, John. It's the same as in wars. People win. They think God was on their side. It's ridiculous. John, if God was a football fan, the Saints would win every game. John, this is a classic problem with social media. If you were to hear his voice, there would be some nuance. Well, he did speak afterwards, and you took exception with that, too. The words were very specific about his faith. Eric Zorn writes in the Chicago Tribune. Read chicagotribune.com/Zorn. Or listen for his thoughts on our weekly podcast called The Mincing Rascals. That drops Thursdays at 5. All right, Mr. Z, nice to talk to you.
I'll see you tomorrow, John.
Nice to see you last night at our friend Scott Stantis' talk at Loyola.
That was a really nice event. Scott's a great guy. I miss him already.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that in the Thursday podcast, the archive of Scott Stantis' editorial cartoons for the Chicago Tribune, are now housed at Loyola. There's an exhibit there. You can see them. He gave a nice talk last night. Corey Lewandowski was Donald Trump's campaign manager, among other things. He co-authored with his deputy campaign manager the book Let Trump Be Trump, The Inside Story. Corey, this is John. You're on WGN. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, John. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Has the president read the book? Has he reviewed it? Have you heard from him since you wrote it?
Well, if you follow the news, and maybe you don't, and I know you might not be used to following the news, I think it's pretty well established I'm in regular contact with the president. I know that might be news to you, but it's pretty well reported, including yesterday's New York Times had that story, in case you missed it.
Well, thank you for updating me on that. You know, the book goes...
You know, if you're going to interview somebody, you should probably be aware of, you know, the regular news of the day.
I know I should. I'm sorry I missed that.
Okay. But let's talk about the book. That's what we're here to talk about.
Oh, we're going to talk about whatever I want to talk about.
Corey, my name is Steve Bertrand. I do the news for John. I know he pretty much listens to my news. And he reads the book. He's read the book, just so you know. I mean, I think you're under an impression that he's not...
I appreciate that, but to ask a question, which I think is just a little bit out of bounds, if you haven't read the book or haven't followed the news, I think puts me in an unfair advantage.
Well, that must be difficult for you because there you are.
I love the colors, yellow and green. I like talk radios when they talk about things. Let's talk about things.
The interview went downhill from there, which is hard to imagine, but it did. My buddy bought an electric beamer. In Louisville, we walked to the store. That was more fun than I remembered it. It's 142 on WGN. The members of the House of Representatives got that memo yesterday, if they didn't know already. He can be a little contentious. Thanks for your many calls and texts to the show in the last half hour. Eric Zorn was on. I did not mean to tick you all off as much as we did. Zorn took exception to Eddie Pinheiro, the Bears field goal kicker's mentions of God and his faith and the reality of Jesus in his life. He called it nonsense. And some of you think Eric is full of nonsense. A couple of last texts. John, this reminded me of the story by Joe Garagiola. Remember the famous commentator and baseball catcher? When the hitter came up to bat and crossed himself, Joe did the same thing. And then he said, he can't help us both. I always think of that story when I see or hear professional players do that. But many, many, many of you are texting into the show to say things like, God is in control. I give her credit for everything. John, wait until you face life and death situation. If your family is ever in a situation like that, you better believe in God. John, here's a thought. If he were a Muslim and gave thanks to Allah, a lot of people would be having a fit right now. But I don't know that that's representative. Here's the ones I was looking for. John, so what? That's how Eddie Pinheiro feels. You don't have to make logic out of it. 815, this young man seems like an upstanding guy and a good person, just trying to do a good job. We certainly have a lot more things that we could complain about. Leave him alone. And one more, the bottom line is, we don't know the answer. You don't know, Eric or me. We don't know what God is thinking or why he does what he does. You can have an opinion, but you don't know. Thanks for listening. It's 143. Here's somebody who does know about food. Restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune on Wednesdays joins us. That's at this time, Phil Vitale. He's on the phone today. Hi, Phil. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm great. Thank you.
Good to hear your voice. Last week when you visited with us, right at the end of the show, we got a flood of text messages and email from people in our Flash Fry segment, and they said, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? Did you take those notes with you?
I did. I took them to heart.
Did you do your homework, Phil?
I did.
Can we do it at the top then and just kind of work our way down, and then we'll go to your Mercato Cucina review?
Absolutely.
Who has the best hot dog?
That was my easy one. Basically nobody. There are maybe three.
I thought you did your homework, Phil. I thought you were going to work on this for me. That does not sound like someone who did their homework.
I'm going to say, there are about three different kinds of hot dogs available in hot dog stores around in the entire Chicago area. You know, it's Vienna Beef or it's Red Hots. I prefer Vienna Beef. So if a place does Vienna Beef, that's going to be on my list. But depending, the best hot dog for me is probably the one that's close by when I'm going to or when I want one.
Yeah.
I'm not going to drive past Big Guys in Berwyn just to get to Superdog.
Right.
I'm not going to leave the city necessarily to get up to Gene and Jude's, even though I like it. I think Wiener Circle does a great job. Portillo's, you're never more than 25 minutes from a Portillo's, I don't think, in this market. I'm fond of all of those Wolfies, Jimmy's Red Hots, Devil Dogs. They all do a fine job, and they all do basically the same job. They're working off the same basic hot dog. They're using a steamed bun. They're using the traditional toppings. If you want something a little different, I would send you over to Duck Inn in Bridgeport for the duck fat hot dogs, which are a combination of pork and duck in them, which are very good, or to Center Field in Wrigley, where the hot dogs kiosk is, where you can get three different types of dogs, sometimes they're Polish and sometimes they're brats, named for old Cubs players.
That is the only hot dog that has disappointed me in the city this year. Your first point I completely concur with. I've never gone to a hot dog stand and thought, oh, gee, that wasn't very good. It's a hot dog with mustard and relish and some celery sauce and its seeds, and it's terrific. But the one at Hot Dogs in Center Field, at Wrigley Field, I got their specialty hot dog. It's all the rage. I don't even remember what it was called now, who it was named after. It was a disaster.
Really?
Yeah, well, you're the restaurant critic, and everybody gets to be their own judge. But
right. Well,
that's
a fun thing. You pay your money. It's your money. You've made your choice. You get to criticize it. Doug Sohn will be heartbroken, I'm sure. But we still have to, you know, he does change it up. So the hot dog you get that's available on one homestand probably won't be available two homestands hence.
Well, I might be there tonight, so we'll see. Hey,
yeah, we're about out of homestands, aren't we? So we got games. We got games all week through Sunday, and then it's see you in April, unless we get a home playoff game.
See you in April? What are you talking about? They're going to be playing in October in Chicago.
Sure, probably several times.
Hey, Phil, where should I take my son for steak on his 18th birthday?
Yeah, steakhouse. You know, Chicago has great steakhouses for sure. And I'm thinking of an 18-year-old. I mean, I look at a steakhouse and I start thinking, well, what's the wine list like? But with an 18th birthday, we don't care what the wine list is like. This poor lad is not going to have anything to drink. So I would say for glitz and star power, I would send them to RPM Steak, 66 West Kinsey in River North. It's very glitzy. It's on two levels. I walked in there the first time and I thought, man, I should have brought my tuxedo because it's that cool and refined there. And the beef, of course, is first rate. You can get that at other places as well. But that would be, if I'm going to dazzle somebody on a birthday, I think I would do RPM Steak.
Phil, where's a fun, unique, affordable date night in the Northwest Burbs?
That one drove me nuts because the Northwest Burbs probably encompasses 20 square miles or whatever it is. So I took some assumptions, and so first I thought is Yu's Mandarin, which is in Schaumburg on Gulf Road. There, it's a colorful Chinese restaurant, although the menu is not complete, you know, is not 100% Chinese. But one of the things they do is they hand pull their own noodles. And on weekends, where I'm assuming this first date is taking place, they will do hand pulling noodle demonstrations that you can see from the dining room. And that is definitely kind of fun, and it's not going to be terribly expensive.
Yeah.
And it's colorful and it's real nice inside.
Well, who doesn't want a hand pulled noodle on a first date? So that's nice to hear.
Right. Well, you got to watch these guys do it. It's pretty theatrical.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in Arlington Heights, a restaurant called Shaku. They've got several locations, actually. I pounced on this one in the Northwest suburbs, and that's a sushi specialist. Very upscale, contemporary decor, suitable for a first date. Very nice.
What about this?
Third choice, Osteria Truly. Also Arlington Heights on Hints Road, more in the rustic, theatrical Italian kind of way, faux walls and things like that, but solid Italian food. And in the same vein, Agio Italian Bistro in Palatine, one of my favorite Italian restaurants in the suburbs.
Northwest Burbs, unique, affordable, fun date night restaurants from Phil Vitale. We'll post all of these answers on my Facebook page after the show. I'm WGN King John. If you're not taking notes, John, a good cocktail. Where should we take them? They want some good beef, too, so I guess this is maybe
beef
a steakhouse.
Yeah, we're back to steakhouses with these guys in the West Coast. They had West Coast friends they wanted to take out for beef and cocktails. RPM I would double up on. I also, again, because of the cocktail thing, I love the way they handle cocktails and wine at Maple and Ash in the Gold Coast. So that's another one. And then for the offbeat one, where you'll have a lot of fun and it's a little more intimate, would be Burf House at 1012 Northwestern Avenue. That's a small place. They don't really have a whole lot of steaks on the menu, only three or four. So there are more things to eat because he said the caller said that the West Coast friends were quote not afraid of beef unquote. So it made me think that non-steak options were still on the table for them.
Yeah.
So for the more varied menu and the cocktail and a very they treat their cocktails with respect there. Burf House at 1012 Northwestern Avenue.
How do you spell that, Phil?
The Frenchie way, BOEUFHAUS.
Burf House. I see. All right.
Actually, it's more German than French now that I'm looking at it.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, let's do this. I'm going to play a commercial, come back and give us, by the way, Phil found a Mexican restaurant that's new, that is fabulous, that's in a place you might not expect to find it. Now, where is that? This new Mexican place. Hold on. That's what you are going to tell us after this. Lots of texts, many of them commenting about noodles for some strange reason. And also somebody wanted to know if Phil's ever eaten at Pink's. I don't know that restaurant. Do you know Pink's, Phil Vitale?
It is a legendary hot dog stand in Los Angeles.
Oh, a hot dog stand in L.A. And you were at the one in Las Vegas, do I understand
right? They opened one in Las Vegas, and I went there.
Yeah. Was it worth flying to Vegas for, by the way?
No, nor was it worth flying even farther to Los Angeles, in my humble opinion.
Yes.
But I just had the one, and even the Pink's devotees that I've listened to or read seem to think that the shakes are why you go in there and not so much the hot dog.
What's the place that serves them with coleslaw and white bread in Atlanta outside of the ballpark, not too far from where the Braves play? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do not.
I'm going to think of that, and we'll talk about that next week. Mercado Cucina is in Glenview, the Glen Gateway Shops. Across from the North Glenview Metro Station has a pretty good Mexican restaurant that's new, huh, Phil?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a funny little location because when you're standing right there, it's almost like there's nothing else around. You look to the south, you look to the north, it's kind of desolate. Now you drive another quarter mile and all of a sudden you see houses again and all the rest of it, but it's kind of a sort of out of the way area, unless you live in the North Shore and you're there all the time, I suppose. But there was Chef Yanitzin Sanchez, who prior to that had two restaurants in Chicago. Both her place Mas and her place Sabor Sever, and then she had a place called Cine out in Hinsdale for a while. And now she's back out in the suburbs, she said, mostly because she thought downtown was too saturated in terms of Mexican cooking.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you give it 2 stars. The nice thing about
she's very good.
Yeah, and the nice thing about good Mexican food is it doesn't run as maybe expensively as say the steaks that we were talking about earlier, for sure. Main
Nowhere
course,
close.
Yeah. Main course is
close.
$15 to $26. So if you're Glenview and that area, lucky you, you've got Mercado Cucina across from the train station there, the metro station, and that's good news for those folks. I'm out of time today, Phil, but I really appreciate your going back and answering all of those questions. If you've got one for Phil next week, text it now, 312-981-7200, and we'll get you an answer on Wednesday. Thank you, Thank you, Mr. Vitale. It's always a pleasure, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have
to. It's 11.
Here's John Williams.
Lots of calls, lots of texts today. Phil will join us again next Wednesday, about 1:35. We're here today till 3. And don't miss the Mincing Rascals podcast. We'll drop that episode tomorrow afternoon at 5 and cover the topic Eric Zorn talked to us about in the first half hour today. Does the Bears field goal kicker Eddie Pinheiro enjoy divine intervention? And a lot of you said, oh, stop it. It's a positive young man. We won. Why do you have to analyze and criticize somebody's faith? It's a rabbit hole. Don't even go there. Leave him alone. Thank you for that. The Rascals will briefly address that and other subjects in the new episode of the Mincing Rascals podcast. Teddy Saves America is our two-man stage show this year, Saturday, October 12th at 10:30 in the morning at Elgin Community College's Blizzard Theater. Call this number for tickets right now, 847-622-0300, 847-622-0300. Or just visit WGNradio.com/Teddy. It's all sponsored by the Joint Relief Institute. Teddy could have used that when he was charging up San Juan Hill. I heard his knee was really bothering him afterwards. It's a wonderful show. Remember WGNradio.com/Teddy for details. Now, do you have kids who went to college or who are thinking about going to college? Maybe grandkids, or maybe they didn't and you are wondering about the wisdom of all of that. You know, there's this notion that college isn't for everybody, but the question is, does it give you the biggest advantage in life? There's the $64,000 question. The guy that's writing about that has written the book How Children Succeed. You may remember that from a few years ago. Paul Tuff is in our studio. He is speaking with Alex Kotlowitz at the Harold Washington Library on State Street tonight at 6 o'clock. It's free and open to the public. Boy, there are two powerhouse thinkers and writers, and one of them sitting right next to me right now. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
How Children Succeed. A great title. I mean, who wouldn't feel compelled to pick that up?
Right.
I suppose the writing helped to get it on the New York Times bestseller list, too. And it was a little counterintuitive, right? You said in that book that it's not just IQ, but really grit and determination that drives children to success.
Yeah, what economists sometimes call non-cognitive skills, curiosity, optimism, grit, that those things matter at least as much as IQ, maybe more so.
Are they innate?
Well, no. It seems like there's a lot in a child's environment, how they grow up, what they're surrounded by, that affects those qualities. And especially when young people grow up in really stressful environments, it's hard for them to develop the same kind of persistence.
How do you define success in How Children Succeed?
Well, I mean, in some ways, I was just using the economist's definition, which is how much money you make as an adult. But I think we can all agree that's a slightly narrow version. I think it's having opportunities, being able to follow whatever kind of dream you have as an adult. Some kids are able to choose from lots of different things. Some aren't.
It's funny, I have some friends who have made through their life and now as they approach and go into retirement, financial decisions that were not in their best financial interest. And the thing that bugs me about them is they seem happier than me, and I'm always trying to maximize my revenue streams.
Right.
So maybe I'm doing it wrong and they're doing it right.
I mean, I think a lot of happiness in life just has to do with your attitude. And I think that's true in childhood and on the way into college as well.
But I was wondering, as I was reviewing your first book, if you would prioritize, though, the attributes that would make it most likely that you would have a good life. So, okay, it's not IQ. It's some of these other things. But isn't IQ one of the most important tools in the box?
It's one of them. I just think that we have put it way out of proportion. And the way that we measure success in school, it really just focuses on that narrow band of cognitive skills that get measured on standardized tests. There's a lot else out there.
Would you list them, though? Like if you had one trait that you would gift your child with, what would it be?
I do think persistence is a big one. I mean, I think the ability to deal well with failure and setbacks, that is just true in anyone's life.
That could overcome a lot of the other shortcomings, right?
Absolutely.
How do you ingrain that in a child?
I mean, I think it's partly by example. So I have a 4-year-old and a 10-year-old, and I think about this all the time with them. And, you know, I want them to be able to bounce back more from failures, and then I watch them watching me have trouble bouncing back from failures. I think that's a big part of it.
Is that a burden to put on your kids that you're the... You've written about the value of these traits. By golly, they'd better measure up.
I hope not. I mean, I think the book tries to take a more holistic vision of childhood and says, you know, don't just label your kid with one particular number. So I try to do that with mine as well.
Your latest book is The Years That Matter, How College Makes or Breaks Us. If you want to cry in 9 pages, read the first 9 pages of this book. About a young lady who is waiting to find out if she gets into Penn or Princeton. And the call she gets from her friend, and I just went, oh, here it comes, and it came. So what do you say in this, The Years That Matter Most?
So the years that I'm talking about in this book are the years right after high school. So college is a big part of it, but I think whatever decisions young people make in those years after high school and what decisions more often are made for them, what economists tell us now is that those are highly important, highly predictive of how the rest of their lives are going to go. And this is also a time on a personal level when young people are sort of figuring themselves out. And so we have created a system of social mobility where all of this pressure is on young people who are at a particularly fragile and easy to influence time of life.
Okay, so it's difficult for them, and maybe we've put too much pressure on them, if that's what you're saying. But is it better that you go to college than you not go to college?
I mean, the short answer is yes. So right now, when the college wage premium, how much more college graduates make than someone who's just gone to high school, it is as high as it has ever been in American history. College degrees are extremely valuable. You know, it depends on who you are, where you go, how you do, what kind of major you take. But on the whole, college really does pay off.
Are we diminishing literally or figuratively the value of the trades?
Well, I mean, two things about that. One is a lot of those trades you still need to go to college. So when I'm talking about college, I'm not just saying, you know, 4-year liberal arts degrees. I followed this one student at a community college in North Carolina as he was trying to make his way to a welding degree.
So CVCC.
Exactly.
And I was thrilled that you wrote about that. And you remind us that to get a degree and to be a welder, you need a degree probably from a JC.
Yeah. And so this was in this era a couple of years ago when a lot of the political rhetoric around college focused on welding and said, like, you don't need to go to college. There's this alternative. You can become a welder, make $150,000 a year. And this young man, Ori, was kind of in the middle of that frenzy about welding. And so in watching him make his way through or try to make his way through Catawba Valley Community College, it gave me some perspective on that rhetoric about welding. And it made me question a lot of it.
What's the truth about a career as a welder?
Well, you can make a lot of money as a welder. Some do, but the average, the median wage for welders is $41,000 right now, which is, you know, not bad if you're just starting out, but most of those welders are, you know, men in their 40s and 50s trying to support a family, and that is not a fantastic wage. So a lot of what I try to do in that chapter is not put down welding. I think it's an amazing trade, and I think
and necessary.
It was fun watching Ori get better at it, but it's the rhetoric that we've put around it. We have, I think, convinced young people that it's an alternative to college. It doesn't mean, and I think that lets us wash our hands of kids like Lauren.
Wash our hands? Why do you say that? What if he wants to be a welder? What if he's a good welder? What if that brings him happiness?
Well, that's great. I just think that and I think he should. And I think we should have a great community college, better funded community college that will let him do that. But I think that the reality is for young people like him who didn't particularly like high school and get out of high school, the options right now that we have given those young people are pretty bad. We just have not developed a system that lets them get to a career that's going to pay them the kind of wage that will let them have a middle class life and support a family. And that has to do with big changes in the economy. That, you know, no one person is able to control. It's just how honest we're being with those people and how hard we're working to develop a system that will help them get somewhere good.
What do you have in mind?
Well, I mean, I think community colleges are a big part of it. I mean, during the time that Ori was looking into community college, North Carolina, where he lived, was cutting the amount that they were spending on their community colleges from about $5,000 to about $4,000 per student. You know, in high school, students were spending $15,000 or $20,000 on, and then you get to the next stage of your educational career, and suddenly we won't spend any money on you at all. But, you know, the community colleges were designed to be the place where people get both skills that'll let them go on to a four-year school or the kind of skills that'll let them go directly into a trade.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I was an example. Many of my friends, because I went there for 2 years, are examples of people that went to the JC for 2 years, got a very good, very inexpensive education at Joliet Junior College, and then you go on to wherever you go on, but you sort of skip at least 2 years of expensive school when you go to a JC. And I got as good at learning at the junior college as I did the four-year school.
It's a great model, and it's exactly what I think, you know, young people coming out of Chicago public schools should have that opportunity right now. But when you look at the data from Chicago City Colleges, the graduation rates, the persistence rates onto four-year schools are not impressive at all.
You cite a study in your book, The Years That Matter Most, How College Makes or Breaks Us. Paul Tough is in our studio. He's speaking with Alex Kotlowitz at the Harold Washington Library at 6 o'clock tonight. You cite some studies and you say if you go to an uber elite school, you have a very good chance of being rich in life. If you go to an Ivy Plus school, Ivy and maybe University of Chicago, mm-hmm. your chances are pretty good too. And it's commensurate, isn't it? The eliteness, if you will, of the school with the probability that you will make a lot of money in life. True?
True. And the reason I think that matters is that there's also a correlation between the selectivity of your school and how many rich kids are going to that school.
Right. So it's almost preordained. The way I didn't realize this. I thought the Yales and the University of Chicago's were very good about reaching out to middle class or minority students. But the way you write about it, they're just picking the cream of the crop and they're predisposed to being successful and rich.
Yeah, I think those institutions focus in their public relations a lot on the socioeconomic diversity of their classes. But this economist named Raj Chetty did an amazing study where he analyzed it using tax records, and he found that at schools like Princeton and Yale, like not much more than 2% of each class is from the bottom quintile, is from low-income families.
2%?
Yeah.
Not even 2% is from the bottom quintile.
Exactly.
Meaning the bottom 20% wage earners, not
right.
The bottom 2%.
Exactly.
Up to the okay.
Yeah, and I feel like that is, the story is
then
that there
bought,
are lots of those students.
I bought into that. I thought it was about half and half.
No, and in fact, in that top quintile, I think at Princeton, it's about almost 75% of the class comes from that top quintile. So there's a lot of rich kids at these schools.
It's 2:22 on WGN. You may have a question or comment, an observation about all of this. And I wonder what Paul Tough thinks the lesson to be learned is from the college admissions scandal and what he thinks of 14 days in jail for cheating. 312-981-7200 WGN. Paul Tough's in our studio. The Years That Matter Most, How College Makes or Breaks Us. So, by the way, how college makes or breaks us. College makes us, right? I mean, that's the idea. You would advise people to, if you can, go to college, right?
Yes, but I think the system as a whole is doing a lot of damage to the country as a whole right now. So the us in Makes or Breaks Us is both individual students who can really suffer if they take the wrong path through college, and the country, which is dealing with the fact that higher education has become so stratified that there are certain institutions that serve mostly affluent kids, and everybody else is going to students that have much lower graduation rates, much less money invested in them.
Are kids taking the wrong majors? Do you worry that kids are graduating with degrees that don't pay off?
Yeah, to a certain degree. I mean, I think it's a really difficult decision for any young person. There are certain degrees that are clearly like very vocational, you know, like that welding degree, nursing degrees, lots of things that are very specific. There's a reason to take those because they do pay off, but they also don't last as long. And I do think that there's an advantage to getting the kind of general liberal arts education that matters so much in a knowledge economy.
John, I have a master's. My girlfriend has a two-year degree. She's a dental hygienist, and she makes six figures and as much as I do with my master's degree. What's your comment on that?
Sounds like a good couple.
You're done right.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's not a direct correlation between how much education you get and how much money you make. But in general, it's true. You know, having a master's degree will, on average, pay off with a higher salary.
What is the moral of the story of the college admission scandal?
I think it is that the kind of competitive pressure that we have put on higher education admissions is driving kids and parents a little bit crazy. I think we have sort of forgotten this idea that it was at the root of public higher education, which is that it's a collective, right? Like it's a collective good. We now think of higher education as a consumer good, something that we have to compete for. And given that it's an unfair situation, I think a lot of parents just say, like, there are no rules. I'll do whatever I can to get my kid in.
What advice do you have to parents then?
To take it easy, to chill out a little bit, and to think in a different way about what higher education is, to think of it not just as something where the job is to elbow everyone else out of the way, but think about how your choices affect not just your own child, but the broader community.
I don't know what that means, the broader community. I think what they should think about is, can I afford to pay for it? And do I strap the kid with a loan that we're all going to regret after they graduate?
I think that's part of it, yeah. I mean, you know, what you were talking about looking financially, looking at community colleges, at junior colleges for the first couple of years, looking at public institutions, I think all of that is smart. It makes sense to not think of it in sort of through magical thinking, but to think of it as a good like anything else. But I also think we have to think about higher education not just as something that we buy for our own kids, but that we invest in the public. I mean, our public higher education system used to be free or cheap, and that was a way that we were educating students. That's why they were able to get out without a lot of debt.
Should it be? Democrats like that. Hillary liked it. Bernie likes it. I don't know where the rest of them are, but that notion is floating to either forgive all student loans or make through the 16th grade college free. What do you think about that?
I think some of those plans are going a little far, but I think the basic idea of returning to what we had a few decades ago when public higher education was free or almost free is the right approach. I mean, you know, 100 years ago, we built all of our high schools because we believed that students needed to get to 12th grade in order to join the middle class, and we made it free. Now things have changed. It's 100 years later, and you need more than a high school degree in order to succeed. But we say to kids, it's on you. You pay for it. You figure it out. We're not going to treat this as a public.
Paul, you're choice. Singing my song. This would have been if 60 years ago we said we'll only get you to the 8th grade, but you really need 12th. We didn't do that. We said you needed to get to the 12th grade. The goal lines moved, and it's now $200,000 to get there, and we don't seem to acknowledge that, which I think is a shame. Everything you said notwithstanding, there's cheaper ways to do it, but
you're right.
When I get to be king, at least junior college degrees, your first 2 years would be free. I don't know if I'm going to be able to finance that, but I could probably get elected with that.
Yeah. I wrote about this era in American history called the high school movement that was more than 100 years ago. And it was remarkable. It was like the technology changed. communities realized that a sixth grade, eighth grade education wasn't enough, and all of these communities came together and built high schools. In 1910, about 10% of students were graduating from high school. By 1940, 50% were graduating. And it was just this response by the country to the fact that their kids needed more education.
Those were the high school graduation rates?
Exactly.
Do those again, 1910?
So 1910, it was 10% of students graduating from high school. You didn't need a high school.
And in World War II, in 1940, it was what?
By then, it was 50%.
I'm shocked that it was only 50 high school. We're out of time. Paul Tough, The Years That Matter Most. He wrote How Children Succeed. 6 o'clock tonight at the Harold Washington Library, 400 South Street, with Alex Kotlowitz on stage talking about stuff like this. What a pleasure, Paul. Keep writing and do join us in the studio again.
Thank you very much.
It's 2:31. WGN Radio News is next.
Good apps, bad apps, and apps I wish existed. I've got a couple others. If you park in handicapped parking without a tag, I have an app that immediately deflates all of your tires. If you cut in front of people in line, I have an app where if I push a button, you immediately get the flu. And I mean the really bad flu.
Oh.
The Steve Cochran app.
If you call, like the telemarketer's calling your phone all the time, right? Mm-hmm. I push 5. You get a mild but significant electrical shock back on your end of the phone, signifying my lack of interest in your product.
Cochran's on weekday morning 6 to 10.
Trio, I want a Slurpee app that tells me which flavors aren't working at any 7-Eleven. I don't want to waste my time.
On 720 WGN.
Today's technology makes a lot of things easier simply because everything is connected. Your cell phone's connected to your tablet's connected to your laptop, and they're all connected to your Wi-Fi. But it may only take one weak link for criminals to get in. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection added the power of Norton Security. While LifeLock uses proprietary technology to detect threats to your identity, Norton Security helps protect up to 5 of your devices from online threats like ransomware. And if there's ever a problem, they've got dedicated agents who are going to work to fix it. Nobody can prevent all identity theft or cybercrime or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But LifeLock with Norton gives you more protection for today's connected world. Act now for a limited time. You get 30% off your first year with the promo code LifeLock. 1-800-LIFELOCK or LifeLock.com. Use the promo code LifeLock and save 30%. Offer expires October 6th, so don't wait. I'm a member, and you should be too. I highly recommend LifeLock. Do it now. 1-800-LIFELOCK or LifeLock.com. Use the promo code LifeLock.
This winter, make it a point to put the smartphones down and gather your family around the original social networking device, your fireplace. Hire Lindemann Chimney and Fireplace. CleanFireplace.com.
The texts are always amazing. John, I went from being homeless to Harvard. Talk about grit and determination. 630, John, Felicity didn't just get 14 days. She got $30,000 fine plus 250 hours of public service and a messed up career and humiliation. I say no jail time for Felicity. 312 says you can bill insurance for dental hygienist services. That's why maybe they make more. John, 630, my nephew is in his fifth year of college, hoping to get a degree in psychology. He's $80,000 in debt. And 630, John, our son went from the College of DuPage for 2 years and then to Columbia, earning a degree in graphic arts. He then moved to Maui and is a concierge at the Grand Wailea Villas. He has a wife, 2 children, and owns a $950,000 home. Glad we sent him to college. I don't know how any of that email makes sense. Thank you for your texts and thoughts. The news in 60 seconds. And then after that, we said yesterday we would talk about the most important story of the week, and we didn't. Today we will. Yes, it's Dancing with the Stars. If you've been seriously injured as a result of a car wreck, construction accident, medical malpractice, or any other type of incident, you need to retain the right law firm for the job and do it as soon as possible. Insurance companies have floors of lawyers on retainer ready to fight against your claim. But with so many lawyers in Illinois, how do you choose? Well, if honesty, reputation, resources, and a successful track record are important, and they should be, then you should choose Lou Cairo and GWC Injury Lawyers. 40 years now, GWC's helped thousands of clients obtain settlements and verdicts in excess of more than $2 billion. You may think, I can't afford that, but you can, because they never get paid unless and until you do. So if you or a loved one suffered a serious injury, call GWC immediately, 312-999-9999, or all together now, visit JusticeStartsToday.com. Sponsored by Lindeman Chimney and Fireplace, WGN Radio News, Jen DeSalvo.
Police investigating after a body was found in the Auburn Park Lagoon on Chicago's south side. They say a man was pulled from the water early this morning in the 400 block of West Winnicana Parkway. He was pronounced dead at the scene. Family members told officers the victim had gone fishing and possibly fell in the water. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has agreed with President Trump that there must be a, quote, united diplomatic response from international partners to the weekend attacks on Saudi oil facilities. Johnson's office said the two leaders spoke by phone on Wednesday. And school leaders in Kenosha say if they allow cheerleaders to remember a murdered student this weekend, they will have to remember every student who dies. Kenosha School District yesterday said it will not allow students to hold a memorial for Kaylee Juga, the young woman who was brutally murdered back in May. Kenosha schools say their lawyer told them a memorial for one student will lead to a memorial for all students, or else there could be a lawsuit. Kenosha cheerleaders had wanted to remember Juga at this weekend's football game. Your money, sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
Hi, this is Lindsay from House Smarts Radio, and I'm inside Builder Supply Outlet looking for a new vanity top for my bathroom. Tom, show me what you got.
Lindsay, your timing is perfect. We just got in another shipment of gorgeous granite and quartz vanity tops that you're gonna love. You know, we always have over 400 vanity tops in stock to choose from.
400? That stresses me out. Looks like I'll have to ask your expert team for help. They know exactly how to create beautiful bathrooms. I want something unique and that'll last for years.
Quality is our specialty. Our stock vanity tops are thicker than those found at the big box stores. Right now, we're selling 25-inch vanity tops for just $199 with a free undermount sink. See store for details. That's 30% less than our competitors. Why pay more for a lesser quality product? This offer won't last long, so hurry in.
I've got my vanity top. Now, come get yours at the Edge Kitchen and Bath in Broadview or the Edge in Orland Park.
Or visit us online at buildersupplyoutlet.com.
High end look without the high end. Price. The Edge. Kitchen and Bath Showroom.
From Builder Supply Outlet.
Every business is different, with a different vision and different assets. Yet most banks offer the same ideas and the same one-size-fits-all solutions. At Associated Bank, we believe banks should offer different solutions for different businesses. It just makes sense. That's why we take a different approach to commercial banking. One that takes the hassle out of banking and works to find customized solutions for you. One that puts relationships and trust first. Sure, that's a little different for a bank. But at Associated Bank, we believe relationships matter and personalized service should be the norm. From capital markets experts who can help set your business on an upward trajectory to treasury management experts with a knack for finding new ways to make your money work for you, we offer a full-service experience with innovative tools for managing your most valuable assets. To learn more about how Associated Bank takes a different approach to commercial banking, visit associatedbank.com/thoughtleadership or tune in every Thursday morning at 5:08 to WGN's The Opening Bell for a discussion on current financial trends and topics from Associated Bank. Member FDIC.
Remember black and white TVs? Or 8-tracks? Or this? All of these, at one time or another, were the best. And then something better came along. Introducing Sultro Fungicide Seed Treatment. The seed treatment bringing SDS protection to the next level. By providing superior control of SDS without any of the stress shown in plants treated with other seed treatments like Alevo, Sultro is SDS protection. Upgraded. Talk to your retailer or seed dealer about upgrading to Sultro. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your money on WGN. The Dow was up 15 points to 27,126. NASDAQ down 18 points to 8,167. And S&P is down 1 point to 3,004. Wheat settled at 489.5, up 5.25 a bushel. Nearby corn settled at 371.75, up 3.75. And soybeans settled down at 889, down 4.75 a bushel. Cattle prices ended higher. Hog futures ended lower at the Merck. WGN Sports, the White Sox visit Minnesota tonight. The pregame's at 6:05. First pitch after that with Ed Farmer and Darren Jackson on 720 WGN. The Blackhawks host Detroit tonight in preseason play. The pregame at 7:30 with Chris Bowden. Then the faceoff with John Weideman and Troy Murray on WGNRadio.com. And over at AM 1000, the Cubs have another night game at Wrigley against Cincinnati. WGN traffic, here's Lauren Lapka.
Edens looks good right now. It's stop and go out on the Kennedy between Montrose and Sarah. It's a half hour to O'Hare, 35 minutes inbound. Both sides of the Eisenhower between 390 and the Circle are 50. Up on Stevenson is backed up until Central. It's 50 to Veterans Memorial and 40 back in. On the Dan Ryan, things are jammed outbound starting at 47th. looking at 35 minutes to 95th, 25 minutes on the inbound side. Lakeshore Drive traffic is heavy southbound between Michigan and Chicago Avenue, and the tri-state is congested northbound around the Eisenhower and southbound around Toohey. For a personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic's Chicago app, approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. Lauren Lapka, WGN Traffic Central.
And the forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, it's partly to mostly sunny, a high of 82. Tonight, mainly clear and mild with a low of 63. Tomorrow, going to see some more sun with a high of 83. And Friday, some scattered showers and thunderstorms are possible, a high of 85. Currently, it's 79 at O'Hare, 80 at Midway, 82 in Gary, and 72 on Chicago's lakefront. I'm Jen DeSalvo in the WGN Radio Newsroom, and these are the stories that matter on 720 WGN.
I think I know why you're playing this, Producer Ella.
I just wanted to let it play a little more. Don't throw shade. Bass Entertainment has partnered with Whitney Houston's estate to launch a hologram tour starting next year. The plan has sparked backlash from fans who say it's not ethical to profit from reviving a deceased musician in his or her holographic form.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if ethical. Maybe it's not ethical. It's just... I
think it's disrespectful.
Disrespectful. DeSalvo, you going to go to the Whitney Houston hologram? She looks great in hologram. You know, it's the good version of her. It's just like Michael Jackson. There's two images you have of him. One's creepy and different, and then one is that bright young man. This is the bright young lady.
Yeah. So Tupac did it first in 2012, and anybody after that is just trying too hard.
Tupac did not do it. Somebody did it to Tupac. You know he
oh,
was
really?
Dead when they did that, right?
Yeah. No.
No.
Of course he wasn't.
No.
Right?
You know, he was dead.
Yeah.
Dead. No, no, I know. Guys.
Oh, come on.
Tongue-in-cheek.
Man.
That's the hard thing with radio. You know, the tongue-in-cheek comments don't always come across
we
that
need
way.
A little light. So it's sort of like on Twitter, right? You go, wait, so are you telling me a funny thing?
Exactly.
So would you go? Are you interested in it?
Oh, I'm definitely not interested in that. I don't spend money on people who are alive, so I don't know why I'd spend some money on someone who wasn't.
Do you remember on one of the elections they did that? They did a hologram in CNN of reporters who weren't there, but they hologrammed them into the election central so you could see them.
I can't say I remember that.
Oh, my gosh. My estimated probability of accuracy on this is 89%. They did this. And it's like dumb because it's TV. You could just put the guy up on another screen and talk to him the way they do. But they hologrammed them in because they could. So that's kind of cool.
Weird.
But it didn't add anything to it.
I feel like you should only use it in things like the Harry Potter ride, you know, over in Florida.
Yes.
Like, there are those rides. I think rides, they can use them. Holograms look cool with rides.
This is my girl.
Yes.
Here's what I think.
I agree.
So it's interesting that they used a hologram as an example of manipulation of someone's artistic style in the show Black Mirror. I'm sure some of our listeners know what I'm talking about.
The Mariah Carey episode.
Miley Cyrus.
Oh, Miley Cyrus.
So close. MC.
Yeah.
it's just all about how her manager tried to control her image, even though it was completely opposite from what she wanted to market herself as.
Oh, yeah. She was giant. As Ashley
yeah.
O.
That's right.
If you Google Buddy Holly hologram, you'll see a video of him on stage. And, of course, he passed away a long, long time ago. He was one of the people that died the day the music died, right? But there he is in a beautiful blue suit, and his face is young and fresh, and his glasses are large, and his smile is sweet, and he's singing so well. And you can't believe that's not him there. And for some reason, that one doesn't bother me as much as Whitney Houston. I'm trying to think of some other people who have recently passed away who, were we to see them as a hologram, I might not like that. But
Eddie Money, Tom Petty.
Yeah. Amy Winehouse. I don't know if they've done an Amy Winehouse, but if they did an Amy Winehouse, I think that would kind of creep me out.
So do you think it's based on how they passed away that bothers you?
Evidently.
Yeah.
It must be it. Michael Jackson's death was so premature. His life was so sour at the end. And, you know, I guess here's the deal. I think it's a lie. I think it's kind of a cheat, isn't it, to say, oh, no, this is them. No, that's not them. That's almost a misrepresentation of them. That's them at a point in time. I don't know. Just kind of rubs me the wrong way.
No, I don't like it. I don't like any of them.
If they said, listen, if Michael Jackson or Whitney Houston said, listen, when I die, do a hologram of me when my teeth were white and my hair was good, then I'm okay. I guess I'm okay with that. But I don't think that was their plan for themselves either. So maybe that's where it feels like somebody's taking a version of them and turning it into money after they've passed away.
It just feels like all the deep fake stuff. Like, did you see the David Hasselhoff interview that they made him look like 30 years younger or whatever?
No, but I saw a deep fake of Obama saying stuff, and it's stunning what they can do.
Yeah, and so it's just like, why do this? You know, she had a ton of time. She did a lot of concerts. We don't need to, like, try and, I don't know. I almost feel like it's just deceitful in a way.
Pulling her right out of the grave and running the register some more. Mm.
Using her image, her voice, her words to portray a message and entertain when you don't know if that's what she would want right now.
There's a video, the deepfake of Obama. I didn't see the one. What was the one that you said, Jen, you saw?
David Hasselhoff.
What's he doing in that one?
So he had an interview. I saw this on our sister, WGN-TV, yesterday morning. They had it on the news. I don't know who he was doing an interview with, but somebody took the footage. They colored his hair brown instead of gray. They took away the aging neck and the wrinkles around his eyes. And he looked like, you know, Baywatch David Hasselhoff. You wouldn't know any different.
And they changed the words.
No, they didn't change the words. They just changed his look.
Oh, okay. Because the one I saw was Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept the look, but they changed the words. So there's Barack Obama saying horrible stuff. The words are coming right out of his mouth. You're looking straight at him. And yet it's a voiceover and it's Obama, but somehow they either manipulated the lips to match the words or they took the lips and they just put different words in there. But anyway, it looks like he's saying crazy stuff. And you watch that video, you go, wow, look at Barack Obama lost his mind that day.
Yeah.
That's the deep fake. And it's as we go forward as a society and decide who we're going to vote for dog catcher, by golly, we have to beware of video that shows you something because you can't necessarily believe it anymore. Speaking of video, Sean Spicer joins us now. Elif just sat down with a harumph. Did you guys watch Dancing with the Stars? I'm sure you didn't.
Of course not, John.
No, you both are above that. So I did.
I did too.
Oh,
I don't
thank
know
you,
if
Elif.
We're necessarily above that. I mean, it's just the off season of The Bachelor, so
I refuse to watch that too. Sorry, Jen, I'm not with you there.
Your Honor,
I can't stop watching. That's the problem.
I submit that Dancing with the Stars is a higher intellectual and moral plane than The Bachelor.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there.
Unanimous.
Takes talent.
But now here's Sean Spicer. There's a piece at CNN.com I noticed today. Sean Spicer's Spice Girls Spectacle. That's the song he danced to, a Spice Girls song. On Dancing with the Stars is not okay. Why, said this commentator? Because he was a liar who lied for a liar for a living. And we should not reward that with a $125,000 paycheck or the platform to repair his image. Sean Spicer was really the best evidence of what this administration was going to be like, and it was deceitful. And we don't owe him a repair job. In fact, it's wrong to do so. That said, a commentator on CNN.com. Here's my thoughts about it. First, before he comes on to dance, they always do the little reparation. It's like, let's get to meet Sean Spicer and then see if he can fix his image.
I was Donald Trump's first White House press secretary. There's no question my time in the White House was very tumultuous.
No, hold on. At some point, report the facts.
You're going to have to take no for an answer.
If the president puts Russian salad dressing on his salad tonight, somehow that's a Russian connection.
So that's a mashup of some of the things he famously said. I think if they were going to be fair and honest about that, they would have had him talking about the crowd size at the inauguration, because that was lie number one. And that one was more than a quip about Russian salad dressing. I remember that, and it wasn't a big deal. Okay, number two, then the sort of, well, gee, Sean, why were you saying all that stuff?
It's
been 2 years since I left the White House, and I thought it was finally time to enjoy myself. I was honored to have a tweet put out in my name. It's nice to have the leader of the free world on your side when it comes to getting votes. I'm a little nervous.
He's smiling. He's laughing. He's just going to have fun. It's time to just enter that new chapter in his life. So then he meets his dance partner, Lindsay.
The internet kind of broke talking about Sean Spicer being on Dancing with the Stars, and I'm looking forward to forming my own opinion. We're going to start with our right foot.
Okay.
You're going to step back, forward. His danceability is at like a pre-preschool level.
Pre-preschool level, meaning you can barely walk.
So you're still pooping your pants, Sean.
I know. You can touch your nose now. And that's about it. Feed yourself. That's about all he can do. Actually, when you watched him practicing dancing, you thought, wow, if this is real, he does have work to do. So then he dances.
Dancing the salsa with his partner, Lindsay, it's Sean Spicer.
And he comes out in this ridiculous Jerry Seinfeld mock lime green satiny shirt. It's almost the perfect shirt for a show that says, oh, we don't care. We have no shame. We're going to do whatever we can with this guy to make fun of him or to have fun and help him repair his image. I'm not sure if Sean knows that the show didn't like him, but that they were having him on.
I like to imagine he picked out the shirt.
Because really, do they have veto power? Can they go, yeah, not so much?
I don't know.
So then the judges review it, and then the judges give the score. And that's where I think the tip is. I think that's where the tell is after this. By the way, about holograms, John, I would love it if they did an Amy Winehouse hologram show. And another one of you said, John, I wish I could do a hologram of my mother, who passed away 4 years ago. It would be so great for my kids. That's such an intriguing idea. I'm surprised that technology doesn't exist. Could you take old home movies or somehow videotape yourself or your kids now and have it as a hologram for future generations in the family? Oh, there's money to be made.
That would be weird, though.
It's the same thing. I mean, if Amy Winehouse hologram creeps you out or Whitney Houston, imagine Grandma.
But at least they're not profiting. They're just, it's sentimental.
Yeah, right. I mean, if you want it, you for your kids, that more power to you. Back to Sean Spicer now. So he does his dance. And by the way, he's terrible on the dance floor. He is not very good. Here's what the judges said.
He was going bonkers with the bongos. What were you doing there? He was like being attacked by a swarm of wasps. I have no idea. But I actually have to say, there was some elements of salsa there. Not always on time or on rhythm. And, you know, and your hip action, at times, it looked like they were setting cement, your hips. You have to get them going a little bit more. But I have to say, it was strangely entertaining.
All right.
I'll take that.
Here we are.
I like your sense of fun. I was very surprised and happily surprised with the way you came at it. Just, you're very boisterous, and I really appreciate that. It's great for the dance. You were offbeat most of the dance.
All right, let's end that there, Elephant. Go to the next cut because we're running out of time. But it was like that. Backhanded compliments at the best. But that's usually what they do, or they're capable of. But then when they give them the scores, I go, here come a bunch of sixes. Because they're always new, and they're going to go easy at the first round. Now, Lamar Odom was up. Remember Lamar Odom? And he got a total of 11 points, a 4, a 4, and a 3. But Lamar Odom was almost not moving. He was barely ambulatory. It's amazing to think that guy's an athlete. You know why? Because he didn't want to dance. Sean Spicer did want to dance. Here are Sean Spicer's scores.
Carrie Ann Inaba.
4.
Glenn Goodman.
4.
Bruno Tognoli.
4.
He got 3 fours, 12 points. You know why he got 12 points? Because they don't like him and they don't want him on there. If that was somebody they liked, he would have gotten sixes. Lamar Odom deserved an 11. Sean Spicer, the way that show works, should have gotten more than 12. My prediction remains that he'll last longer than the scores would merit because people are going to vote for him. We will see. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis. Mm-hmm. Hi, kids.
Not Amy, Anna, but Amy Guth, not on the program either.
Heard her voice in the background.
I know.
Some boy, my brain works.
We'd love to have her on the show soon, but not today. Today we have Ben Bradley of WGN-TV fame. They celebrated 25 years for the WGN-TV morning news last night. What a huge thing. What a huge deal. And the special was remarkable, I thought. Hard to boil that all down to 2 hours, but they did an amazing job. He's also going to... talk about CPD trying to gain access to a new web of cameras to fight crime. And this particular one is fascinating, also controversial, because it's those doorbell cameras.
Yeah, right.
Right? Think about that, what that would do for the police and what kinds of pushback you might hear about that kind of a proposal. So we'll talk about that. Also, Alderman Riley, fresh back from the city council meeting, will be visiting with us to talk about new vaping regulations for the city. Those new pot regulations, the proposal, I should say, that would keep the dispensaries out of the downtown district when marijuana becomes legal, wouldn't have it anywhere downtown. Alderman Riley doesn't like that idea, and he says if you really want to maximize the tax flow from this, you probably want to have it in the downtown, one or two of them in the downtown district. So he'll talk to us about that. Also, Congressman Kinzinger will be on the show talking about Secretary Pompeo and describing the Saudi oil field attack as an act of war, what that means for us in terms of the U.S., our next move, our engagement.
Man, I don't want to be Secretary of State. I don't want to be Defense Secretary. I don't want to be President. I don't want to be Mayor. It's fun to campaign and say, I'm going to do all this stuff. And then when it hits the road, you've got some decisions
to make. Real problems, right,
yeah,
John? Real problems to solve. So we wish them the best. Thank you, John.
Thank you.